Mike Riley throws for almost 400 yards once again, and right now in your eyes, he's got to be the MOP frontrunner, right?
It really seems like it, Pat, especially when you consider the players that aren't on the field right now for Edmonton. Their top four receivers from 2016 are all either sidelined or in the NFL. That would be in the case of Darrell Walker. Darius Bowman's on the six-game injured list. Brandon Zylstra was on the one-game injured list for the game in Week 8. And John White, starting running back, as we all know, is out for the season with the torn ACL. And then you look at it where Duke Williams, who was an emerging playmaker to start the season, he's out too. And ever since Adarius Bowman has been out, Riley's actually averaged somehow more passing yards per game since the 2016 CFL leading receiver has been out. So Riley has been operating and producing even with all of these name guys out of the lineup, which really stands out to me and makes him the front runner at this point for MLP.
Well, it's pretty amazing what the Eskimos as a team have been able to do. You just mentioned, you know, Bowman's been hurt and they don't have Darrell Walker. He's in the NFL. And you throw on top of that the two defensive injuries they suffered during training camp and Greenwood and Sherrod going down. I mean, this team has been riddled by injuries, and yet here they are at 7-0. What is the key to Edmonton's great start? Is it go beyond just Riley?
It does. To me, the other big key has been the All-American defensive front there that has wreaked havoc consistently. They lead the league in pressures on opposing quarterbacks. They did lead the league coming into Week 8 with 53, and they had a bunch more last night on Trevor Harris, so I'm sure they'll just open up more of a lead in that category. But Almondo Sewell and Marcus Howard, two starters, went down last night, and Jason Moss called those injuries devastating. So you feel like with Moss saying that they'll probably be out for the foreseeable future. That said, there's some guys that have been playing rotationally that have played well behind those guys. Daquan Bowers, who has four sacks, has played on the interior, and a Canadian rookie in Kwaku Boateng as well. He's got a couple sacks too. So I wonder if those two guys step up for those guys on the defensive line. But that D-line has really been, I think, a major factor in the 7-0 start.
So they take out the Ottawa Redblacks 27-20 last night. Ottawa's now 1-6-1 in their follow-up season to their Grey Cup championship. We know Henry Burris made some comments earlier in the week, kind of pointed to a lack of leadership and saying this is not the 2016 team. How did you interpret those comments from Henry?
Just factually with what Henry said, that literally it is not the same team because so many players moved on. Obviously, Henry Burris was one of those at the quarterback position, but you didn't have other guys like Chris Williams, who didn't play in the Grey Cup, but had a big role in their season in helping them get there. Ernest Jackson moves on to Montreal. Then you flip over to defense. Abdul Kane, although he's been hurt most of the season for Hamilton, he's gone and from playing a tough spot at the boundary halfback position. And you have some new faces across the board as well. So from a factual standpoint, Henry's right. The way it was interpreted by some Red Blacks, though, was sort of the fact that, oh, well, Henry's not here. That's the reason why we're not winning. And I think we should all remember that the Red Blacks were an 8-9-1 team last year that got hot and won the Grey Cup. Full credit to them for that, but they were a sub-500 team last year with Burris at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Still salvage. I mean, the East Division is not great. Nobody's above 500 right now. I know it's a horrid start for Ottawa at 1-6-1. Is there still something to salvage there?
There certainly is, right? When you look at Toronto right now, leading the division with only 3 wins, they've already played 7 games, going to play Montreal tonight in a big one for the top of that division. But it's still pretty wide open, considering that we're getting to that part of the schedule where we're around Labor Day, and the East Division teams are going to be playing each other, which should make it a little easier for Ottawa if they get hot and make a little bit of a run here to vault up the standings.
Justin Dunks with us. He's our CFL insider from Sportsnet and Three Down Nation. Tonight, you mentioned it, Argos playing in Montreal. Jeff Matthews going to get the start. Ricky Ray ruled out for this one. We don't know how long Ricky's going to be out, but Jeff Matthews starts tonight. We're expecting Cody Fajardo to play as well. But what are we expecting in terms of how Toronto's going to deploy their quarterbacks tonight?
Yeah, so a lot of people thought that instantly when Ricky Ray went down with injury and it was announced that he was out, that Cody Fajardo would be the guy getting the start at quarterback because he was coined as the number 2 guy coming out of training camp. But I've been told, and it's proven to be true, that look out for Jeff Matthews actually getting the start. And Fajardo's going to see some play time. They see Matthews as more of the pocket guy, Fajardo a guy that can maybe push the edge and roll out and do some more things with his feet. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them sort of used in tandem at different points in the game and some separate packages that Tressman has drawn up. And I also am expecting to see some wildcat from this Argos offense. So Tressman, it seems like, is going to mix up the looks. And although the Argos are a heavy underdog, I would never count them out, especially with Mark Tressman coaching the offense.
Well, and Jeff Matthews has been in this league for a little while. Fajardo, it's more of a new experience for him. But tell us a little bit more about both these quarterbacks that we'll see tonight.
Well, Jeff Matthews had a little bit of a starting run back a couple of years ago with Hamilton when Zach Collaros was hurt, had an excellent touchdown to interception ratio, 6-1. He's actually started a game in Montreal, although it was probably a film that he would like to burn and forget ever happened. And Cody Fajardo, a kid out of Nevada University that might be more known to fans for what he can do with his feet, but to be a legitimate CFL quarterback in this sort of turbo passing league that we're seeing now, you have to have that completion high. So that's what the Argos want to see out of Fajardo, is him being able to complete balls from the pocket at a high rate.
Also, Mark Trestman's return to Montreal tonight. He's now the head coach of the Argos. I'm guessing this should be a pretty nice reception for him in Montreal. I'm guessing he gets a pretty nice homecoming tonight.
I would imagine. If it's anything but a nice reception and, you know, maybe a standing ovation for a guy that came into that city and helped them get to a number of great cups, obviously winning some as well. And the way he left was, you know, going to an NFL head coaching position, which no one can fault him for. Obviously, from a bank account standpoint and the standpoint of advancing your career, should be nothing but positive for Tressman.
Where are we on the Alouettes? They're 2-4. I take a look at them and I see a defensive group that has really carried the day. They're one of the stingiest defensive groups in the CFL. Offensively is where they made all their changes in the offseason, but you know, Darian Durant and his group of receivers haven't really clicked, and Tyrell Sutton's been hurt. And where are we on this Alouettes team? What type of potential does this group have at 2-4?
Even though they're 2-4, and you know, because of them being in the East Division, the Owls still have a chance, and they're right in the thick of it, to win the East and get that bye. And you talked about Darian Durant, who struggled in the first three games, but the last three, with a bunch of new targets, it should be said, right? All of these guys were new to Darian, as was the city and the team. In the last three, he's thrown for 296, 452, and 348. So it seems like he's getting more and more comfortable. What was shocking to me, their last time out against Winnipeg, was that the defense gave up 41 points. That is not typical from Noel Thorpe's unit, and I would not expect that to happen too many times, if even again this season. And as long as Darian Durant keeps producing at the level he's been the last three games and continues to get on the same page and get a better feel for Ernest Jackson, this Owls team is going to be a tough out in the East.
Justin Dunks with us from Sportsnet and Three Down Nation. He's our CFL insider every Friday on the Big Show. Okay, Hamilton plays tomorrow. They'll look for their first win of the season. They take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at home. And the Ticats made a big change this week. They have replaced Jeff Reinbold as defensive coordinator with Philip Lawley. Doesn't sound like Reinbold is going to be staying in the Tiger Cats organization. First of all, do you have any of the latest in terms of Reinbold's future with Hamilton, and what do we know there?
So Reinbold went on his own Sky Sports NFL podcast. It's something that he used to do, or does actually still in the offseason, works for Sky Sports on their NFL broadcasts, and essentially ripped the Ticats. And he didn't name him, but thanked the owner in Bob Young over there, the president, Scott Mitchell, and never named Ken Austin, and talked about disloyalty. So it felt like Reinbold, at just going off what he said, felt like he was undermined there. So he didn't explain exactly why he felt that, but that's what he said on the podcast, which was very interesting. And part of that may come from the fact that I was told that actually Philip Lawley interviewed for the defensive coordinator position while it was being decided in the offseason and before it was given to Reinbold. So maybe that's connecting some dots there and part of the reason that Reinbold felt like he was undermined.
What was your overall reaction to the decision? I mean, Hamilton has given up the most points in the CFL this season. They are the worst defensive team. Not just Reinbold's fault. Was this a move that needed to happen in your eyes? I'm curious as to how you reacted to the decision itself.
Well, it just seemed like at some point the Ticats were going to make some sort of move, right? Can't go 0-6 and show your fans that you're not trying to do something different to create change when you get in that hole. So they bring in June Jones before the Eskimos game, who was brought there late in the week, so didn't really have a chance to get too involved there in the game plan. Much more involved he will be this week and will be in terms of some of the play calling as well. And when you look at the Ticats defensively, just from the stats that they put up, as you said, they were last in the league in points per game. It seemed like a change was necessary. Now, that said, for me, the jury's still out to see how well this actually works, because now you're going to change your scheme just six games into a season after you spent an entire training camp putting in different schemes. So whether or not the changes actually work will be a better indicator to me of if this was the right move.
So what about Kent Austin's future? I mean, I know that he calls the shots at football operations. He's the vice president of football ops, so his fate's going to have to be decided above him. But where are we on Kent Austin and his future in Hamilton?
It's still early in the season, right? And I think some people look at the 0-6 record and, you know, think that Kent Austin is automatically going to be out of there at the end of the season. But reality is he's under contract for two more years, 2018 and 2019. And he, as you said, has the final decision-making power in that building almost over everything. And it would be hard, you know, at this point to think that Kent Austin would be out of a job at the end of the season just based on how far entrenched he is there with President Scott Mitchell, the owner Bob Young, and in terms of his contract. But if it keeps going, and let's say, you know, heaven forbid for the Ticats' sakes, that, you know, they get to 0-10 or even farther down the road, then that will be when the real conversation should happen about Austin's job.
A couple others for you league-wide. First of all, tell us about the BC Lions. They are looking to recoup a Canadian offensive lineman, looking to maybe claim him off another team's practice roster. What can you tell us there?
Certainly, Pat. So they've had a little bit of tinkering up front on their offensive line, started Charles Vinecourt last week, and they went to the Riders practice roster and tried to sort of reverse what had been done to them. So they originally drafted Dylan Guy, Canadian offensive lineman, out of the University of Buffalo in the fourth round just a year ago in 2016. But after training camp ended, they wanted to put Guy on the practice roster. So at that point, that gives players a choice. You can actually either accept the practice roster agreement and go down there, or you can look to other teams and see if anyone's going to put a claim on you for them to put you on their active roster. So the Riders did that, put him on active, signed Dylan Guy, who had been coming off an ACL injury, allowed him the entire year to get healthy. And lo and behold, this year, just a couple weeks ago, BC goes and tries to get Guy back when the Riders put him down on the practice roster. He decides to stay in Saskatchewan because he felt loyal to the team, but it shows you that there's so much of this stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we don't even hear about, and it's clear that the Lions are looking for some more depth at Canadian offensive line.
And finally, former NFL quarterback Josh Freeman, he was on a CFL nag list. Now he's not on a CFL nag list. What are we? What's the latest when it comes to Josh Freeman?
So originally, he started out on the Calgary Stampeders nag list, went to minicamp with them this year, did not perform well by all accounts from Stampeder coaches and personnel men, got dropped off their nag list, and then the Montreal Alouettes had him down at their mini camp, then brought him up to Montreal to work him out. But at no point did they add him to their nag list, even though it seemed like a contract was pretty close at hand. So when that was going on, the Ottawa Redblacks put him on their nag list, which did not allow the Alouettes to negotiate with him any longer, but He has since been dropped off Ottawa's neg list, which shows you that his interest in terms of CFL teams seeing him as a possible quarterback in the future or at some point is waning.
Good stuff, Justin. Appreciate it as always, my man. We'll do this again next Friday, but good to hear from you again. And enjoy the rest of the Week 8 games, hey?
Certainly will. You too, Pat.
He's Justin Dunk. He's our CFL insider from Sportsnet and Three Down Nation.